Robinhood Radio presents Between the Stacks, a weekly chat about our local libraries.
Hi, Courtney. It's Sarah from Kent Memorial Library.
Hey, Sarah. How are you?
I'm great. How are things over in Millbrook?
Good. Busy. I feel like April, like, I can't believe it's April, first off, and I feel like we've just, like, hit the ground running.
That's a good thing.
So we have lots of good stuff happening, though, but how is your building project going?
Oh, it's going well. We've got some very large holes in the ground.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's good. There's always things that come up with building projects, and the latest, besides extra asbestos, which is fun. We knew there was some, but it's like, it's everywhere. But then we found a septic tank. So the library, the firehouse, which is the building we're annexing, was built in the 50s. And the sewer, we didn't have like public water and sewer in Kent until the 70s. So there was a septic tank, but it wasn't on anybody's charts or anybody's maps or anybody's anything. So when they were digging to put in the foundation for our connector piece, they discovered a very large tank in the ground. So little things like that, you know, what's a couple of extra $1,000 to get things out, you know? But it's been exciting. The town got really excited when we put up the construction fencing. Well, the contractors, because it really felt very, very real then, you know, like this is happening. So it's been good. It's been good. It'll be a long year, but, you know,
what are you gonna
do? Worth it. We know it will be worth it. So we're talking about library history. I don't know anything about Millbrook library history. I'd love to hear.
Oh, yeah. So we actually, this was great timing because we just had a presentation in partnership with the Millbrook Historical Society mm-hmm. in March about the history of the library. So I am up to date on my facts and figures, and we have the slideshow on our website and the recording of the presentation that's linked to YouTube on our website, too.
Oh.
But it's really cool, actually. So in 1882, the Women's Christian Temperance Unit were actually the ones that started the library, and we were in a building right down the street. If you've ever been to Millbrook, it's the J. McLaughlin Building.
Okay.
Now, and it's like diagonal from my house, which is pretty cool. And that was the original library building. And then in 1901, the Millbrook Free Library Association was founded by local citizens to serve the community. And we moved in 1902 to the Thorne Building, which used to be the local school and now is in the process of being turned into a community center, which is super exciting.
Wow.
But basically, they were like, you can move in here, but we want you to move into your own building eventually. We'll give you 5 years to figure that out. And then we were chartered by New York State in 1904 officially. And then in 1908, our original library building, which is part of our building now, was donated by Anna Hayes in memory of her husband, Richard Summer Hayes. And we actually have a bust of him in the library that was made from his death mask.
Are there still Hayeses in the area?
I would imagine. I don't know any personally, but I feel like it's a common last name. So
that's true.
And the building was donated in 1908, and it stayed like it was, just basically one room, until the 1970s, where we added on our second wing, which, if you're familiar with the library, is where like our gallery space is, the circulation desk now. And then from 1973 to the early 2000s, things were pretty much the same. But then in 2002, we added on our nonfiction room, which we have our nonfiction stuff, computers, and our children's area downstairs. And then the last big thing that we did was in 2017, where we added study rooms, the nonfiction room, and a teen room in the children's room. And that's been like the last big building update that we did.
Yeah.
But in this presentation that the chair of our friends group actually did. She did a great job. It was so cool. She pulled out all these quotes from the local newspaper about like what the library was doing and how it really was like a real pillar of the community from the beginning, which was very cool. And it helped with things like the war efforts in the 40s. And it was just really cool to see like how much that was written back in like the early 1900s still applies today.
Yeah.
And there was one quote in particular, I'm not going to be able to remember it exactly, but it was basically along the lines that, like, we are told that the library is 3/4 librarian and the books in the building make up the other 1/4. And I was like, that was written in 1919. And I love that so much. So, but I could go on about this for like an hour, I feel like, and I want to give you a chance to talk to you about the history of your library.
Oh, well, that's neat to hear. I really like that quote. That is important because we talk about that a lot when we talk about funding.
Yeah.
That, you know, the biggest line item is always personnel. Mm-hmm. And your library, if it's providing resources and it doesn't have the personnel to support that, It's just an empty building. It's just a storage shed. And if you need the people. And so and people are what really cost money, not necessarily just the things. The things cost money too, but not at the same level. So that's a nice quote. We probably have a similar history in that, you know, we started off quite tiny and grew with the interest of our community. So we started with let me preface this by saying our original library building, which is the small building right on Main Street. It's a red brick. There's a word for the style, but I don't remember it offhand. Anyway, it just had its 100th birthday. So in honor of that, we convened a centennial committee and we put together a book. And the book is so fabulous, and it's so beautiful, and it won a big state award this, I think it must have been in 2023 when we finally put it out. And it's really nice, and it has, what we did was basically, we started off with the founding of the library and then did pieces for each decade of the library's life, and then added a whole bunch of more information about sort of where we are or where we were, of course, in 2022. It's a really lovely piece of history, and it was about 18 months of work by this really active committee, and it's full of photographs, and then it also has an online piece. So we have what's called the Centennial Timeline, that in addition to this book, it's got oral histories, it's got people, so we would take pieces of history from the library and have members of our community read those. And
then I love that.
It's really cool. And some of them, you know, if they have anything to do with children's activities, they were read by local children who, you know, of course, are growing out of their little baby voices now and are older. And it's really cool. So we have this two-piece thing happening at the same time, this physical booklet, which is, I don't know, 50 pages, something like that, and then an online timeline. So the online timeline, in addition to having these personal histories and stories read by locals, also has books of the decade. It has cultural touch points of each decade, so it talks about what was happening. It talks about all the books that people were reading, and then it does like a panorama of the world, and then it does what was happening in Kent, and then things that were happening in the library. So it's pretty cool, and we're really proud of it. I'd be happy to share it with anybody who wants to see it. You know, those are the sort of things that become real treasures to our community.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we were we were incorporated in 1915. We were originally like a reading group that sort of moved around to people's houses. But in 1915, a group of like-minded citizens incorporated the library and started putting together a plan to actually build a building. So it was originally just in someone's house, but they became, and funnily enough, they wrote about why they were doing this and why they felt like they needed a library, and because the town wouldn't raise taxes. Which, you know, again, like, it's exactly what's happening now, right? So the town didn't want to raise taxes to build a library, but the people said, no, no, we need this, so we're going to do it ourselves. So there was obviously a lot of wealth in Litchfield County at the turn of the last century. We were a big, you know, manufacturing area, lots of, I'm going to mess up all the history of the area, but lots of mining, and certain towns had big infrastructure and some really wealthy people like Sharon and Salisbury and even Torrington. So those libraries were all endowed by some very wealthy patrons, and they were able to basically build a building with a gift of a person. But Little Kent was a bunch of farmers, and we didn't have any sort of illustrious residents. We just had people who built basically everything with bake sales and husking bees and little tiny fundraisers until they built their what we call the jewel box of Main Street, jewel box like brick building in 1922. So and it's tiny, but it's great, and it now serves as our reading room, and we keep certain collections in there. And then we expanded in 1955-ish and put on another wing of that building, and I think probably added some bathrooms. I don't know that there were bathrooms in the original, which, you know, it's such a small town, you just go home. So, but, and, you know, we have stories of how, you know, the library's hours and yada, yada. And then we had a big enough parcel of land that we allowed the fire department to build their garage on our property. So there's some great stories about how there was a big fire at Kent Center School in the 50s and 60s, or 50s or 60s, I don't remember exactly, but that whole classes would have their, they would meet actually in the firehouse. That was the biggest space in town for people to gather, so they would have school in the firehouse, which is cool. And then in 1994, we completed the most recent renovation, which added, more than doubled the size of the library and added a big entryway and the circulation area and the children's room, which at that time the children's room was on the second floor of our small building. You had to go up these absolutely against code stairs and carry your kids up there. It was cute and cozy, but it really wasn't a place for anybody to gather. So now, 30 years after that, 30 plus years after that, and it seems to be every 30 years we get itchy. So we're now on our next expansion, which will put us into the stratosphere. We're going to almost double in size. We're going from 6,500 square feet to 11,000. So
it's amazing.
It's pretty cool. It's been a long time coming, a lot of work, and again, similar to what was happening then to its founding is, you know, we did get a grant from the state, but all the other money was raised by people, by local people. And the majority of it by local people who use the library, not just our, you know, Kent has come up in the world significantly since the turn of the last century. And we have some very illustrious neighbors and friends here who've been wonderful supporters of the library. But a lot of our biggest donors to this project are actually people that come in and check out books, which is really neat. It wasn't, you know, fundraising is always funny that way. There's a lot of surprises when you go out to the community and ask for their help, and you have to, you know, prove your case and make it make sense to them for them to open up their wallets. I mean, we had to raise a lot of money. So to see it continue to be such a community-supported space is really heartwarming. It makes you feel like we must be doing something right. We must be serving people the way they want to be served. So
yeah, and I feel like that's such a testament to the work that you're doing, the fact that people do recognize the value very clearly and are supportive and want more.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like sort of an Andrew Carnegie coming in and saying, "And thou shall read." You know,
yeah.
It's more like, we love this place. It matters to us. And so that feels really good. But yeah, I mean, almost always our little library has been run on volunteers. We have always had a pretty small budget. I've always had a pretty small amount of money that comes in from local taxes. So we have our other little claim to fame is that we have the number one per capita volunteer rate in the state of Connecticut.
That's very impressive.
It's kind of cool, and it's like bazillions beyond everybody else. I mean, it's really, really high, and it's because we have to raise so much money to maintain our programming. So we have a book sale, which, I mean, they put in the summer months like 300, 400 hours a month of time, all volunteer. We have a raffle. We do a benefit. We do all these things, and all of those hours and hours and hours of work really do add up. So we like to think of ourselves as a little library that could, but we're about to be the ginormous library that could, which feels great. Feels
well
great.
Deserved.
Yeah. It's a neat time in the library's history to watch us really spread our wings and push outside of what we've been doing. So, do any more good history stories to share?
I feel like we could make this like literally an hour if we really want it, because there's so many. We have the librarian who is here longest, Miss Dodd, is a big part of the library's history. We have Flagler, who was a huge part of creating the library and supporting the library and funding the library. Honestly, he was really instrumental. Without him, the library wouldn't be what it is. Yeah. Harry Harkness Flagler was really involved with the railroad industry and really loved the library. And he was, I think, board president for something like 50 years. And I think most of the newspaper quotes that I really liked were written by him.
Oh, neat.
But there's so much.
yeah.
Is there anything that you are doing coming up that you're excited about?
Well, we have our official groundbreaking. You know, we've obviously been working for a while, but we've got our funny hats and big shovels event coming up on the 25th. We have some good stuff coming up for the America 250, including a John Adams impersonator, which will be good. I keep telling people he's just zombie. He's a zombie John Adams. But no, he's a real person and he's alive. It'll be fun. We're in the middle of spring break week, so we've had lots of wonderful things for the kids, which we do programming every day when the kids are out of school. So one of the things coming up, they're showing Wicked. I think yesterday they did a program on batteries and how they work. It's really neat. Lots of interesting stuff going on. How about you? Any big stuff coming up?
Yeah, so I think we're really excited on the 25th, Saturday from 11 to 3, we're doing our first repair cafe.
We're doing that too! In the summer,
so
we're starting.
Because we've been trying to do it for like a couple of years, and it's finally come together, and I think it's going to be really good. And we're coordinating it. Millbrook kind of does like an unofficial community sale day that day where can set up like yard sales,
yard sales.
And things like that. So we're doing it in coordination with that. And then later that evening, from 4:30 to 6:30, we have our final winter concert series, which feels weird to say winter concert.
Because it's 87 like degrees, maybe.
that's going to be really good, too. And those are always really fun.
Well, I'm going to have to call you offline, and we'll talk about this repair cafe, because this came to us from some locals who wanted to start this, so we're just kind of finding our way, so I'll have to pick your brain.
Yeah, I'll let you know how it goes.
Oh, great. That sounds dangerous. Okay, good. All right, so I guess we'll talk again in a couple more weeks.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Between the Stacks is produced at the facilities of Robin Hood Radio 91.9 FM, Sharon, Connecticut.